Tenno, avec les autres. Vous le savez, c'est la meilleure façon de combattre le virus, même lorsqu'on est vacciné. On continue de se protéger. Un message du gouvernement.
This is CKUT 90.3 FM, and the show is Amandla Radio. I'm Doug Miller, your host and producer this week, and it's a very special show for me. Last Wednesday was World AIDS Day, and for me it is a time to stop and reflect, get angry and re-energized. Let me explain why, with a bit of personal background about this insidious disease. The a cappella singing you heard after the Amandla theme music was recorded by my wife at our home in Makupo Village in Malawi in 1997, after the death of her younger sister, Ethel. Kenny and Rhodamanda were singing with Ethel's daughter, Beriam Teketeka, mourning the loss of her mother, Ethel, who died in a pathetic state in Malawi's Kasungu District Hospital that year. She died of an opportunistic infection, probably cerebral tuberculosis, which enters the already emaciated bodies of people who are HIV positive when they reach the final stage of full-blown, untreated AIDS. We usually associate tuberculosis with a lung disease, but when the body is so emaciated and its defenses reduced to zero, tuberculosis is opportunistically happy to settle in any organ it can attack. It is an excruciatingly painful way to die. She died in a hospital with no drugs and overworked, under-resourced personnel because Malawi was forced by the international financial institutions and their structural adjustment programs to spend more money on servicing the debt than allowing the government to spend on providing education and health care to some of the poorest people on earth. Millions of Africans in sub-Saharan Africa suffered Ethel's fate. Becoming HIV positive was essentially a death sentence, hastened by conditions of World Bank and International Monetary Fund structurally induced poverty. It is very much a disease that thrives in conditions of poverty, where low levels of education and health service, as well as chronic malnutrition, provide fertile grounds to spread. Because of the double whammy of structural adjustment programs and the untreated, undiagnosed HIV/AIDS pandemic, average life expectancy rates fell from around 50 years of age at Malawian independence in 1964 to 37 years of age by 2003. The rich people know how to look after themselves and ignore those who don't have the resources, while Malawians and Africans were dying in their millions At the same time, HIP-positive folks in Canada were already receiving the life-saving cocktails free from their healthcare system and achieving long and useful lives with their condition. Militants in the gay community and progressive medical personnel and other activists had spent the previous decade destigmatizing the disease and pressuring governments to invest public funds to deal with the epidemic. Since then, the disease is very much in the Canadian background. HIV-positive people here are on the cocktail of medications known as antiretrovirals, ARTs, and are living such normal, healthy lives that most Canadians, when asked, don't even know anyone who may be HIV-positive. Militant action by a variety of groups during the late 1990s around the Jubilee Debt Cancellation Campaign gradually helped to relieve some of the poorer countries of the oppression of the burden of debt. In the case of Malawi, it took until about 2004 for the debt to get cancelled and staff and drugs to return to the hospitals. A parallel campaign in the early 2000s put AIDS on the international agenda and led to the creation of the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis and Malaria. That same campaign included promoting the production of generic drugs at greatly reduced prices in order to allow mass distribution to people throughout sub-Saharan Africa, which still today remains the epicenter of HIV today. And there is hope. Yes, there really is hope. After 2005, with the debt cancelled and generic drugs coming more and more readily available, there's been a slow but impressive increase in the life expectancy in Malawi to over 64 years today. What was once a death sentence has been turned around and people are able to live normal, productive lives. My brother-in-law, Fraser, tested positive in 2008 and about 2 years later was put on ARVs when he began falling sick quite regularly. He is a peasant farmer who wakes up early before dawn to work his fields and loves spending time doing carpentry and a lot of time playing with his grandson, the pride of his life, and the HIV-negative child of his daughter, Rhoda, who is HIV-positive and legally blind. She ignored her condition too long and it weakened her immune system so badly that another preventable opportunistic disease destroyed her eyesight. She and her child are 9 people who are positive out of a population of 60 or so in our village. They are all on ARVs and most are living life very well. Everyone from the youngest to the oldest citizen of our village has been to the voluntary counseling and testing center, many of them annually, to confirm their status. If they are positive, they must learn how to treat and live with their disease. If they are negative, they learn how to stay negative. The latest science that gives hope is that the aim of 90-90-90 has to be met by 2030. 90% of all people living with HIV must know their HIV status. 90% of all people with diagnosed HIV infection will receive sustained treatment, and 90% of all people receiving treatment will have viral load suppression. When that many people are on treatment, the HIV viral load in any one individual's body is so low as to be almost undetectable, and transmission rates are reduced to almost zero. As such, the disease could be eliminated as a pandemic and a killer by 2030. But there's the rub. The killer disease of inequality is still alive and well. Debt rates of poor countries have once again soared and are straining the economies and infrastructure of structurally underdeveloped countries. COVID has once again revealed the venality of capitalist drug corporations and the governments of the rich countries that refuse to join the global response needed to tackle any pandemic as they seek outrageous profits. So tonight, good friends, dear friends, ladies and gentlemen, you will hear World Health Organization's Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus call on governments and citizens to use every tool in the toolbox to narrow inequalities, prevent HIV infections, save lives, and end the AIDS epidemic. You'll also hear a WHO specialist in a public service announcement talk about ending mother and child transmission in poor countries, and that once again outcomes for rich and poor countries and rich and poor within countries are skewed in favor of the rich and against the poor. Finally, the University of KwaZulu-Natal held a panel including several noted South African epidemiologists on World AIDS Day last Wednesday. You will hear KZ KZN Director of Communications, Busisiwe Purity Nkama, set a bit of context and then introduced Dr. Professor Rufilwe Paswana Mafuya, who was part of a panel of experts on HIV/AIDS as she presents her radical action to end the HIV epidemic by the 2030 deadline. In between are AIDS songs from South Africa, Congo, and Uganda. Stay tuned for this Amandla Radio Show in honor of International AIDS Day, December 1st.
Sangisa makasi, to sangisa mayele, mboto pikula.
Bendele mabe,
oyu babengi, nikama ya sida.
Nikama ya sida, eza kobenga, bizo nyanzo na komba. Nanso, tokende komba.
Yango bizo banzembie. Bito balanga nze moto sangani foto Pamela
Sida.
Nyoso na komba
Nanso, toke ne komba
Yango to biso banjembi Yango to biso to sangani
Tous unis contre le sida.
Eh ouais, abstinence, bonne fidélité, capote.
Eh ouais,
perds pas ça l'esprit avant que tu capotes.
Eh ouais,
café, c'est toi l'avenir de l'espèce.
Eh ouais, man.
Pour une fois, aie ce courage. Entre pour le dépistage.
Tous ensemble, allons en guerre ouais. Contre ce fléau qui tue les nôtres. Une cause qui vaut la peine.
Ouais.
Kokozanani, soki peuple awe,
soki peuple awe.
Oh, pasta, situation ma boza danger.
Nearly 2 years into the COVID-19 pandemic, we're still a long way from ending it. But there is another infectious threat that, after more than 40 years, is not over either. The HIV/AIDS epidemic. Around the world, almost 38 million people live with HIV. Last year, an estimated 1.5 million people were newly infected, and 680,000 people died from causes related to AIDS. While some countries have made real progress against the disease, many others are falling behind. Even before the COVID-19 pandemic hit, many of the most at-risk populations were not being reached with HIV testing, prevention, and care services. The pandemic has made things worse, with the disruption of essential health services and the increased vulnerability of people with HIV to COVID-19. Like COVID-19, we have all the tools to end the AIDS epidemic if we use them well. On World AIDS 2021, WHO calls on governments and citizens to use every tool in the toolbox to narrow inequalities, prevent HIV infections, save lives, and end the AIDS epidemic.
End inequalities, end AIDS. WHO's 2021 theme for World AIDS Day. Since the 1980s, when acquired immunodeficiency syndrome caused by the HIV virus was first properly reported, treatment has been hindered by inequalities in access to HIV services. According to UNAIDS, vertical transmission or mother-to-child transmission contributes the most to AIDS among children. In 2019, there were 79,000 children in India living with AIDS, and that number is still increasing. One child died of AIDS-related causes every 5 minutes in 2020 across the world as the COVID-19 pandemic worsened access to healthcare. Testing in developing countries reduced by more than 50%, and so did the number of children receiving antiretroviral therapy. Antiretroviral drugs are crucial because they stop the virus from replicating in the body and help people lead normal lives. Infection rates also spiked during lockdowns because of gender-based violence, limited follow-up care, and maternal HIV testing. Without any interventions, there is a 15 to 30% chance of transmission during pregnancy. If a mother is on ART drugs, the risk of transmission reduces because the viral load is contained. These need to be combined with TCAD or the triple combination antiviral drug regimen. During pregnancy, it is imperative for a woman to have an HIV test done. If it is positive, then ART therapy begins immediately. If it is negative, then the test needs to be done in every trimester. Since HIV antibodies are not detectable soon after exposure, the child of an HIV-positive mother needs to be tested and put on ART therapy if he or she is positive. Another important measure is the CD4 cell count. This is a test which measures immunity by counting the number of T cells per cubic millimeter of blood because they help fight infection. Mothers who are HIV-positive can breastfeed their children, just like the general population, if they take regular medication. While the rate of transmission has reduced over the years because of early detection of the disease, there is still a long way to go before children and all other patients with HIV can receive equal access to healthcare and medication.
It really is a pleasure today to host all of you on this special day, the World AIDS Day. My name is Businama, as been described already. I am a Deputy Vice Chancellor and Head of the College of Health Sciences. Today really marks the year 2021, marks the 33rd anniversary of the World AIDS Day. It's the longest that has been running since, it's the longest disease awareness campaign that has been running with the aim at creating awareness and prevention. So it's the longest in its kind in the history of public health. The World AIDS Day was first observed in 1988 and has since been initiated by health ministers from around the world who called for a spirit of social tolerance and a greater awareness of HIV and AIDS on an international scale. The theme, as we've heard, the theme of 2021 is End Inequalities and AIDS. Now entering our third year with COVID-19 pandemic, which has exacerbated the inequalities that we are seeing and disruptions to HIV services, making the lives of many people living with HIV even more challenging. This year's theme addresses this issue by highlighting the growing inequalities in access to HIV treatment and care for the estimated 38 million people which are now known to be living with HIV worldwide. This event is also meant to underscore the importance of awareness of HIV and AIDS and its effects on poor people's lives, our families, friends, local neighborhoods, and nations around the globe. It's an important part, it's an important day. And an important part of the World's Day is that it helps create awareness and education at the local level. So we are really honored to be hosting you today. We have just discovered that this university, by our scientists, the Omicron variant of COVID-19, we have seen that the inequalities are becoming widened. Yesterday, we looked also at the fact that unemployment had risen. So these are all the things that we are hoping will be highlighted today. the violence against women and children, which is also really high. All those issues are the issues that will be unpacked today. But my task is very simple today. I'm not the one that will be telling you about all of these things. My task is just to facilitate this event and introduce our esteemed speakers who will be taking you through some of these lectures. It really is my pleasure to introduce Professor Refilwe Ninsipaswana Mafuya, who is a professor of epidemiology and public health at the University of Johannesburg, Faculty of Health Sciences. I think this year we said we always host this event using our own scientists. It's always good to hear from people who are outside UKZN, and it's our pleasure, really, Prof, to be hosting you. Professor Refilwe Ninsipaswana Mafuya is a professor of public health and epidemiology. She holds a Master of Public Health Program, Faculty of Health Sciences at University of Johannesburg. She is an MSc Reproductive Biology and Health Guest Epidemiology Lecturer at Pan African University of Life and Earth Sciences, based at the University of Ibadan, Nigeria. Preceding this, she was an active executive director, research director, and chief research manager at the HIV and AIDS and STI TB Research Program, Human Sciences Research Council, that's HSRC, for nearly 13 years, as well as serving as an editor-in-chief and executive director of an internationally accredited journal, Sahara. She's an a South African Medical Research Council mid-career research scientist, a research program holder, which is aimed at building the next generation of current and future pandemic fighters, independent scientists in South Africa. And we really need those, because we often hear that we've entered the age of pandemics. She chaired the second largest medical meeting in the world, which is the 9th South African AIDS Conference in June 2019, and delivered the declaration of commitment to end HIV by 2030 in cabinet. She's a member of the Dira Singwe Conferences, Higher Health Board, ASAF Council, NRF Board, International Expert Panel of Infectiology, representing the African continent, African Academy of Sciences, AAS Fellow, and Organization for Women in Science and Developing World Fellow. She's an ASAF and NRF merited scientist. She has been doing large-scale, multi-country, multidisciplinary HIV studies for the last two decades. She was awarded the NSTFTW Ngambule Award in 2017 in recognition of her outstanding contribution to science, technology, and mathematics, 15 years after obtaining her PhD. So she has been very long in this journey. She's the former Deputy Vice Chancellor of Research and Innovation at the Northwest University and an author of the Vision Never Dies book, which was published in 2021. Her vision is to change, transform, and impact lives. With this world, it's my pleasure really to welcome you, Prof. The topic that you are going to speak to is radical action to end the HIV epidemic by the 2030 deadline. Ladies and gentlemen, I hand over to Professor Ninsipaswana Mafuya. Prof, thank you very much. Over to you.
Good afternoon, Program Director, Deputy Vice Chancellor Ngama. Thank you for your kind introduction. Executive directors at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, fellow panelists, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for the invitation. The 1st of December is a very exciting day, but it is also an emotional day because it's a day on which we remember our loved ones that we have lost through the sketch of HIV and AIDS. But much as it's emotional, the hope has been our pillar. And a lot of developments have taken place such that today HIV is no longer a killer disease, but it's a manageable disease that with equitable systems, anybody, whether HIV positive or not, can thrive in this life. And thanks to many people, healthcare workers, government departments, political organizations, communities, beneficiaries, scientists that have jointly worked together. Having said that, as the theme or the title of my talk says, Radical Action to End the HIV Epidemic by the 2030 deadline, I'm going to be challenging us not to let our guts loose, because if we do, we will fail in stopping this pandemic from being a pandemic, but to being a manageable disease where we have zero deaths, zero infections, zero stigma, and it becomes like polio and many other diseases that we have overcome over the years. For us to achieve that, indeed, we have to go radical. And I hope that by the end of my presentation, we will be energized, you know, to focus in spite of the competing health priorities that we are faced with, the limited resources where we have to do more with less. So in my presentation, I'll touch on why radical action. And I'll demonstrate a little bit of facts and figures, and I'll acknowledge the work being done. I will also highlight radical actions that could be taken with regard to addressing inequalities and inequities. And I'll talk also about scaling up of evidence-based interventions. We have the knowledge, we have the information. We just need to make sure that it reaches, you know, the people that need it the most. And I'll do some concluding remarks. Why radical action is needed? The war is far from over. Why there is still no cure or vaccine after 40 years of fighting this disease? And South Africa remains the home for the HIV epidemic, the center or epicenter of the epidemic, and new infections remain unacceptably high. There are still thousands of deaths that we evidence, and there are still people who are not on treatment, and we know what it means not to be on treatment. That is death. And there are people who cannot get virally suppressed because they cannot have access to treatment, and because they have it sporadically or for other reasons that I'll highlight in my presentation, they do not adhere, and therefore they become resistant, and therefore they become severely ill and then eventually die. And those are things that we'll be looking at. How do we radically address them so that we achieve the most with the systems that have been put in place? Facts and figures, as at 2019, according to the UNAIDS report, 7.5 million people are living with HIV in South Africa, and the media statistics South Africa 2021 report allude to an estimate of 7.7 million people living with HIV. So this is a bit dated, and the prevalence is like about one in five adult people in the ages of 15 to 49 are living with HIV, 200,000 new infections, 72,000 AIDS-related deaths, and 71% not on ARVs, and 47% of children not on ARVs. And the region, which is also the hardest hit region given our country and countries like Swaziland and other top five countries that are leading the epidemic in the region, we are still by far the epicenter of the epidemic. And we have 20% of all people living with HIV in our region, and 20% of new HIV infections are in South Africa.
This is Amandla Radio at CKUT 90.3 FM. You are listening to an extract from a panel discussion organized at the University of KwaZulu-Natal to commemorate World AIDS Day. Dr. Professor Refilwe Paswana Mufuyu was part of that panel of experts on HIV/AIDS who presented her paper entitled Radical Action to End the HIV Epidemic by the 2030 Deadline. Let's listen to more of that.
Give credit to our South African government and leadership for unparalleled commitment, the legislative framework that we have, the initiatives that have been there, the alignments that have always been made to keep up the response to the epidemic in spite of competing health priorities again. And we know that it is the Department of Health, not the Department of HIV or not the Department of COVID-19. They do multiple work with limited resources. So while I'm going to talk about some of the challenges that we need to deal with, I wanted to clearly acknowledge this because I'm one of those people that were given the latitude to address ministers in cabinet through the facilitation of the deputy president, who is the chairperson of the South African National AIDS Council. And I have had the privilege of listening to them making commitments towards ending the scourge of HIV, and that is really to be applauded. And internationally, legislative framework continue to be put in place in order to make sure that we do not lose direction. And as we know, the UNAIDS has made a political declaration on HIV and AIDS to end inequalities and to get on track to end AIDS by 2030. And that, again, is to be applauded because a global commitment, spirals to regional to national commitments. Now, we need to push beyond complacency. We need to address the myth, that HIV is over. HIV is no longer a public health emergency, that everyone is well-informed, everyone is HIV tested, everyone is on treatment, and everyone adheres to treatment. That is a myth. I'm sure you will agree with me. You've seen the number of deaths we are still experiencing. You've seen the new infections that we're still experiencing, and people who are not in treatment and so on. Therefore, we cannot let our guts loose. The response to the HIV pandemic must be guided by who is HIV killing in disproportionate numbers, for greater impact, focusing on where the need is most. And Dr. Errol Fields from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine says, there are stark differences in HIV outcomes due to HIV disparities. The racial disparities that so rapidly emerged with COVID-19 are a reminder that until these inequalities or inequities are addressed, disparities in HIV and COVID-19 outcomes will persist, and ending the HIV epidemic will remain just a dream that will never come true. So we know some of the social demographics, that serve as dividing line between the risks and achieving of the desired outcomes. And I will allude to them in a moment. And this is the question that I'd like us to keep at the back of our minds. What would have happened if HIV cure was available tomorrow? Accessibility and affordability would prevent thousands and thousands of people who need it the most from being able to take that cure right away. We have seen it with COVID-19. We have seen it over decades with HIV and AIDS, that inequalities serve as barriers for people to access services, and to receive quality services, and for us to achieve the kind of coverage we need to have. So health inequalities and inequities serve as barriers to transforming the, you know, our response, or to fast-tracking, shall I say, our response. You know, for most people living with HIV, they would meet a doctor twice a year, only for 30 minutes. Equitable healthcare access, you know, addressing systematic barriers or systemic barriers, you know, and ensuring availability and quality and resources, you know, that would transport people to various facilities to access healthcare is quite key. So the topic of celebration of this year's World AIDS Day could not be better. It could not have been better than what it is. Inequalities have been looming around, and I think it's time that we face this head on if we are to meet the 2030 deadline. High HIV prevalence and new infections among women have been seen. We all know what the distribution is like in South Africa, where women and girls constitute more than 50% of people living with HIV and AIDS. I'm sorry that I forgot to put percentage there. And where young girls, adolescent girls and young women have an HIV prevalence that is four times higher than that of young men. And by the way, even with young men, it is a huge concern. I couldn't cover the statistics, you know, about all this because that is not really the purpose of my presentation. However, suffice to say, young people are impacted very negatively by HIV. Now, because we know that there are gender impacts, we need our responses to be also gendered. For example, many women are forced to use their bodies as a currency for food, for medicines, for school, and what have you. They are exposed to GBV, as it was alluded to earlier on, gender dynamics in terms of role, cultural roles, and some of the cultural practices that continue to disrespect the dignity of women. Stigma, stress-induced mental health challenges, where they have a lot of responsibility to carry out without the means, being in informal work environments, not having any job security, low income earners, basically their working and living conditions being insurmountable for them to lead a normal life. And for some, this leads to early sexual debut, teenage pregnancy, intergenerational relationships, sexual exploitation, human trafficking, the list is endless. We need to deal with the gendered impacts of HIV and have gendered responses. And those include addressing the issue of poverty, the issue of unemployment, the issue of the low status of women, the issue of their working and living conditions, empowering women, empowering young people so that they are not on the street, they are not on drugs, they can manage their lives better. We need to confront unsustainable livelihoods. They increase HIV prevalence, new infections, they deter treatment uptake and adherence. And when we talk about radical action, we need to make a clear distinction between structural barriers and individual choices. If people choose deliberately not to be responsible, that is something else. But here, when we talk about inequalities and inequities, we're talking about people who most of them would love to make choices, but they are hampered from making choices because they don't have the means. For example, rural and marginalized communities face a double epidemic. As South Africans, you know exactly what I mean. Poverty is extreme, inequalities in terms of income. You know South Africa is the most unequal country in the world. Now, such people may struggle to take daily medication while facing food insecurity, while they don't know where they're going to sleep, while they have no means whatsoever. And some of them can't even go where treatment is. And eventually they will never become viral suppressed, and they will never have better health outcomes, and their quality of life will just be destroyed. So these things can affect the ability of people to take, you know, or to comply, you know, as we have seen even with COVID-19. So we need to eliminate these disparities and ensure availability, accessibility, and affordability of these services so that we can improve health outcomes and cap the differences along racial lines. We need to prioritize interventions in more prevalent and socioeconomically worst off environments. We need to mitigate lack of access and expand healthcare to uninsured patients. Pandemic thrive on inequalities. Just a week or so ago, we have seen how Africans are hospitalized in bigger numbers than other racial groups at a younger age group, and how Black African females are hospitalized far more than their other female counterparts. And the only logical explanation of that, is the living and working conditions, because these are young Africans who are in the 20 to 29 age category, 30 to 39 age category, where the expectation is that they have lower comorbidities and so on and so on. Why would they have higher rates of hospitalization and even of death? The logical explanation is the inequalities. So as you have seen, COVID-19, a pandemic, HIV, a pandemic, TB, a pandemic, continue to thrive because of inequalities and manifesting in differential impacts depending on the socioeconomic background of people. To transform the course of the epidemic, we need to expand care and prevention strategically to those who need it most, Nora Volker says. So what I've tried to do, and I am rushing because my time is limited, I have taken a few of my studies to demonstrate the kind of evidence that we have in our hands that we can expand, you know, on scale up successful interventions in order to radically change the context as we have it now and end the epidemic by 2030. First, starting with dealing with inequalities, as I have demonstrated. And now I will talk more in terms of the scientific results that we got and how we can utilize some of these. And I know there are various other works that have been done by other scientists that we should be tapping more on in order to respond in an evidence-based manner. Firstly, we need to work collaboratively as a continent, you know, much as we need to work collaboratively as a country, not us and them. You know, we can only win if we work together. I shared this study that I did in 10 African countries, being the overall PI, with each of the 10 countries having respective principal investigators that ended up with a book on effective responses to the HIV and AIDS epidemic at work. This showed that collaboratively, we can really bring solutions to the African country and their continent and their commonalities. There's knowledge exchange we can benefit from. So as a point of departure, I want to say, let's not work in silos. Let's work together so that we can multiply our limited efforts with the strengths of others. Further, we can scale up community-based approaches. Nothing for us without us. That is what the HIV community says. And here we tested a community-based intervention that sought to ensure early HIV testing, early treatment and retention in care for better outcome. In this case, the primary outcome being viral load suppression. And we found that community-based interventions, like having these interventions in non-clinical settings in order to expand the work that is being done in clinical settings, especially for key populations that are most often discriminated against, stigmatized, and so on, and thus don't feel free to use public services, having alternative places or point of care type environments where they can go for services, worked in ensuring that you know, they get HIV services timelessly. Further, we need to scale up community level combination prevention interventions. Multidisciplinarity, interdisciplinarity, transdisciplinarity is going to be very key if we are to achieve the 2030 deadline of ending HIV as an epidemic in our country and eventually globally. You can imagine that if South Africa gets it right, given the fact that we are the epicenter of the epidemic, then the world will get it right. So it is really in our hands. And here we found that when we have combination prevention in non-clinical settings, working with beneficiaries, especially high-risk groups, like having biomedical interventions, having condoms, PrEP, behavioral interventions, such as, you know, avoiding multiple sexual partners and so on, and community level HIV prevention interventions where you are involving those that are the beneficiaries, worked in reducing HIV acquisition. We followed a group of men who have sex with men to look at how many of them or what proportion will seroconvert if they are given a package of interventions that we know, condoms and, you know, colorful condoms, flavored condoms, you know, and messaging and engagement throughout and so on. And we found that there were higher levels of non-seroconversion. So we know what works. Let's scale up what works. We need to estimate sizes of high-risk populations because that will give us the denominator we are working on, and we will be able to measure our impact and monitor our indicators. So we have done studies involving mapping population size estimation, as well as assessing risk heterogeneities, because you know, accepting the fact that there are epidemiological heterogeneities in terms of risks of different groups of individuals is quite key, because you've got to know your epidemic in order to know your response. So again, continuing in that fashion, in this case, we estimated in Ghana, and we also estimated population size in Port Elizabeth, and we could tell, you know, what is the size of men who have sex with men, for example, in Port Elizabeth, just like we did in Ghana. This information is critical for policymaking, is critical for informing programming, for resource allocation, for prioritization. Such information needs to continue being generated in order to continue making sure that policymakers are informed by science. We need to scale up non-conventional models of care for populations that are disproportionately affected by HIV so that they can engage in care. For example, here we looked at strategies that could be used to ensure that female sex workers of a reproductive age access prevention of mother-to-child care transmission services so that their children are not born HIV positive, and also so that they can manage their HIV status so that they do not become severely ill and so on. So we've got to acknowledge, you know, the fact that conventional methods of just saying we've got clinics, go and access ARVs, go and get condoms, work, but the context within which we are in, where the stigma, the discrimination, And also there's lack of capacity that we would love to have, and there are no sufficient public health facilities. Some of the people have to go across the river and whatnot, and when the weather does not allow and stuff like that, they just cannot access, and there's long queues and what have you. We know our struggles as one of the developing countries. It's not a unique situation. Those are realities that we have to deal with in order to deal with the HIV epidemic and end it by 2030. We need to harness big heterogeneous data to inform programming. We have lots of work that is being done from different angles, from different corners, from different disciplines. We need to amass that information. This is the era of the fourth industrial revolution. We need to use machine learning techniques, 4IR techniques. We need to use technologies and virtual methods, you know, to ensure that we cap the spread of HIV. And in this case, we are beginning a study of that similar nature, which is funded by the South African Medical Research Council as part of the SAMRC Mid-Career Scientist Capacity Building Program, where many young women and we are prioritizing previously disadvantaged young people to develop them and ensure they have capacities, you know, to carry the knowledge enterprise forward, to fight pandemics and epidemics. We have that responsibility. And as we have seen for each project, you will see they are interns, they are, you know, there are people of various levels, so as to make sure that we transfer the knowledge as we work in order for the fight, you know, to be carried forward even by the new generation. And as I go towards the concluding remarks, I also want to mention, you know, the fact that we need to mitigate the impacts of COVID-19 for the continuity and sustainability of healthcare services. And I must applaud HIV scientists, government again, and many other role players, the community, HIV communities, for continuing amidst all competing priorities to ensure that these services, pick up, because we have had a dent, not a problem of anyone. The world was caught unawares. COVID-19 caught us unprepared. But what we want to do is to make sure that we don't continue to be disadvantaged. We take our position and provide leadership on this. We need to implement tailored interventions because we are more and more seeing people who are resistant to HIV-1 regimen, you know. And so we have proposed this study. This has not yet been conducted, and we've requested the Wellcome Trust to provide resources so that as part of the generic public health services for individuals that are non-viral suppressed, we should do drug testing resistance for HIV-1 regimen and determine if we should rather put them on HIV-2 regimen. The point is that for us to achieve the 2030 deadline, we need to make sure that when we put people on treatment, people become virally suppressed and then leave. Not to put people on treatment, which is very expensive. I mean, South Africa has the largest HIV program in the world, one. And South Africa is the first country in sub-Saharan Africa to administer pre-exposure prophylaxis. Hence, I have been giving them accolades for the commitment they have shown. But it is up to us, you know, in terms of making sure that what we are administering is effective. And so that is one of the tailored interventions that we will be looking into very, very closely. As I conclude, you know, a clear-cut agenda leading to 2030 is desperately needed. We cannot afford to be wishy-washy We have to be deliberate. We have to be focused, ensure continuity of services, ensure that we focus on groups that are disproportionately affected, ensure that evidence-based interventions are scaled up, ensure that dialogue continues. We don't lose the conferences, HIV conferences, as we have had them. They rejuvenate us. We work collaboratively in order to ensure impactful work. We address barriers, especially inequalities, so that we eliminate HIV by 2030. Thank you very much. I wish to acknowledge my postdoc fellow who worked with me, Dr. Edith Palani, is sitting right here by me, and my university for having afforded me the opportunity to give this presentation. I thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Prof. Thank you so much.
Dear friends and comrades, you've been listening to Amandla Radio here at CQT 90.3 FM Montreal and our special commemoration of World AIDS Day. What you've heard about the problems created by unequal access to diagnostic, vaccination, and treatment of HIV/AIDS is equally true of how we as a world society respond to the COVID pandemic, which is proving to be as intractable as the 40-year-old HIV/AIDS epidemic, for which there is still no vaccine, but at least a program of treatment that can control its impact. Please act to pressure our governments to force the drug companies to open their patents to the generic producers so we can prevent the same long-term inequality of dying that remains the reality of AIDS in Africa today. There is hope, and things can and must change, and it's up to all of us to make noise for that to happen. Stay tuned to Jazz Euphorium. Good night.
I'm Martin Carly, and I like to popularize science. Vaccination against COVID-19 for children aged 5 to 11 has begun. As parents, you may be asking if your child will receive the same vaccine as adults. The vaccine used for children younger than 12 years old contains a smaller amount of mRNA because children's immune systems respond better than those of adults. And even though they're given smaller doses, the vaccine is just as effective.
For more information, visit quebec.ca/youthvaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
It's now laughing time. No need to run away from it. To keep this a living space. Loving the life. Moving with natural emotion. Keeping rhythms on the line. Let's go for a while. No need to worry a minute. Just live in the space you are. That is enough. Something else is gonna happen. And we call it laughing time. Hey, what you gonna say about funkin' on four? Running around, making people crazy. Don't know happiness waves, just life. Telling a story. Now we know it, when we blow it, it's just a feeling. No one dealing, just life speaking. About the things that we know are funny at times. Why do we funk up four? Playing the game. Life can be love, why not? Why do we run from love songs? For times so hard we can make a play. The feeling. I'm old.